The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. We roll along in the morning. One part of the World Series is in Boston. Is won the American League Championship Series, beating the Astros in five games. Tonight, we've got the Dodgers and the Brewers, and it is going to be at Miller Park in the next two games. The Dodgers can win it tonight and go back-to-back in the World Series. The Brewers can extend the series into seven games, and if they do that, I'll be really curious to see what Milwaukee is going to do with all the pitchers that they want to use. Listen, make no mistake, I know there are traditionalists in baseball who go down the line of what Craig Counsell in Milwaukee is doing is a sham to the game. Just using pitchers, not having a traditional starter, not letting that starter go through a six or seven inning sort of, eating up some innings, but using so many pitchers. Look, when you get to this position, all that matters is you win. You got to win games, and you got to win the games utilizing the best way you can. And if that means trying to manipulate your lineup so that you use seven pitchers to try to trick up the opposing team, and it's all legal, so be it. Unwritten rules in baseball, you got to throw them out occasionally. And I don't think this is an unwritten rule. This isn't like, you know, don't steal with a 10-run lead, that kind of stuff. But people are kind of worried that Craig Counsell may be doing something that'll damage the game. I don't think that's true. I don't think this is going to be a new way that managers are going to utilize pitchers. There's just too much risk. You keep throwing out arms, you're going to keep running the risk that one of them is going to be flat. I think Counsell is doing this because, in the end, it's his best chance to win against the Dodgers. It doesn't mean that this is how the Oakland A's are going to do things. The Yankees aren't all of a sudden going to start putting this into practice. I still think that the traditional starter, you know, the Justin Verlanders of the world, the Max Scherzers of the world, right? I think that they are still going to be prominent. I don't think you have anything to worry about. Does it bother some people? Yeah, it doesn't feel right. It feels a little weird when you start Wade Miley for one batter so you can trick the Dodgers in their lineup card. I get it. But if it's not illegal, it's the best chance to win. You got to utilize it, even if it drives the traditionalists crazy. All right, 800-777-2907. The number to join us this morning. Talk a little more baseball and NFL coming up in college football as well. Oh, so much to get to here in hour number three on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could join us for SB Nation Radio as we move along. And we've been talking a lot of baseball today as the Red Sox win and the Dodgers and Brewers tonight. Are we going to do this with the Lakers, Ron? Every game they play, we're going to talk about what was LeBron's first point as a Laker. It was a dunk. This is how many points he scored, but this is what's wrong with his team. We're going to do this all season. There's 82 games. It's long.
No, we're going to do it all season long.
I really want to make sure because I won't be able to live if I don't get my LeBron Laker update from America, from the American media that wants to drown me in LeBron statistics from the West Coast.
Yeah, no, all season long we're going to talk about, you know, first time he scored 10 points in a quarter, first time he's got to 20 points and a half.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, the first time he, decided to take a granny shot at the free throw line.
You know, I don't want to let America down here. I don't want to let the American sports media down here. But just a reminder, people, that LeBron James is not winning the NBA championship in day one.
Don't ruin the hopes.
I know.
The season just started. Don't ruin hope yet.
Oh my God! I woke up this morning and I'm looking through some stuff and I read LeBron needs this. It doesn't need anything. It's game one. Could somebody relax? Nobody thought the Lakers were going to be competitive against the Golden State Warriors. This is a long-term play for LeBron. This is not an instant oats cereal thing. It's a long-term play. He even talked about that. Team chemistry is not instant oatmeal. It's not. You got to look down the line. He's going to even bring in more players next year. Stop overanalyzing this basketball team because LeBron's on it.
I'm not really sure I know what you're talking about, and frankly, I don't appreciate your tone right now. I have the Lakers winning it all.
Oh, boy.
They're up there with the Cleveland Browns.
You're right up with the Cleveland Browns. By the way, did anybody panic in Houston when they lost to New Orleans on opening night? Did you have to calm some people off the ledge in an 82-game season?
Well, no.
I know there are some fan bases that just mentally break down over this stuff. And you're like, calm down. It's just week one. Relax.
It wasn't so much, do we need to talk him off the ledge? It was more of like, you know what, just blame this on Carmelo.
Oh, absolutely.
This is all Melo's fault.
The thing about having Carmelo Anthony on your team, even if he doesn't do anything or actually has a good game, you can just blame Carmelo.
Yep.
Something must be going on.
And then it wasn't a meme. It was like a little sound or a gif or a gif or whatever you want to call it. It was like a short little video of Carmelo. He was going up for a rebound or something like that, and he ended up saying F out of here.
Oh, okay.
But saying the whole thing, and people took that like, you know, people are reading that into like, see, he's already wanting to leave Houston. And I'm watching him like, I think he was just, you know, he went up for a contested rebound, grabbed it, and was just telling the other guy to move aside. Politely. But that's how people are. It's either one extreme to the other. It's, you know, either Carmelo's going to be the savior of Houston Rockets or he will be the detriment.
He'll be the detriment. He can't win.
And
it,
no. You know
what? But it is his fault. I mean, he threw it on himself. Look, I covered his final season in Denver, and I did post-game for the Avalanche and the Nuggets. I had a night show in Denver, so we were outside the Pepsi Center every home game. And we had a Nuggets reporter, and he would go to the games, and he would come over to the restaurant afterwards, and we'd talk about the game. And every single night that Carmelo trade rumors were up in the air, every night he'd come over, and he would say what Carmelo Anthony did at the end of the game. Oh, I saw him shaking hands with the ball boys. I saw him shaking hands with the security people. I saw him hug the elevator gal. Like these little nuggets, right? Not, you know, to use a pun. These little nuggets of information garnered us to think that at any second of any moment, the Cronkies were going to pull the trigger on a trade. And we had to wait this out forever. And then finally went to the Knicks and was like, thank God. Just get it over with. Just rip the Band-Aid off. But that's what he's been. That's what he's done. So, but this is the sad part of it for him is that he could play the role perfectly. He could do exactly what Mike D'Antoni wants him to do. He could go out there, score some points, not make a fuss, be a good teammate, come off the bench if he wants, start if he wants, whatever they want from him throughout the season, whatever role they want him to play. And I'm telling you, because of his persona, you're absolutely right. If things are not right with the Rockets, if they're just off a touch, he will get blamed. We played better defense when he wasn't around, or he took that shot and James Harden could have taken it a better. Every little micro thing that he's going to do because he's an easy target. Just That's just who he is. He's an easy target. It's been like that. He was like that in Denver. He was definitely like that in New York. Oklahoma City, they threw him under the bus. They can do it in Houston because no one sticks up for him. And he really doesn't have a lot of defenders. He doesn't have a lot of defenders out there.
No, he has no chance at winning at all this year.
Yeah. It's too bad.
I mean, even if the Rockets, went on a tear and say they lost, they better their record of when they went, 66 and 13 or 14.
Something
like that. I'm terrible with math. 66 and 16, maybe that's what it is. Even if they were to better that record, he won't get any credit for it. It wasn't because he came to the team and helped out. It was because, James Harden and Chris Paul had the best years of their life.
Yeah, that's true.
The best year of their career.
Yeah, exactly.
The same token, if the Rockets, say they missed the playoffs. I mean, it's not going to happen, but say they were to miss the playoffs. It's all Carmelo's fault. Oh, it had nothing to do with anybody else on the team.
Oh, forget it. If that happens, forget it. Goodness.
If they win the NBA championship and Carmelo has like a series of a lifetime, he won't get the MVP.
Yeah, it's very true.
Probably more likely go to Eric Gordon than anybody because.
Let's go to the Eastern Conference for a second. In 1986, Boston had the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 20 against the Bears. Even though they got demolished, they still were the AFC champions. The 86 Red Sox, Roger Clemens struck out 20 batters in April, was 14-0 heading into the All-Star break. Red Sox led the division, went on to win, beat the Angels, beat the Mets. Beat the Angels, lost to the Mets in the World Series. And then the 86 Celtics are considered one of the best teams basketball has ever seen before Jordan's teams. They have the potential to do that again in a different kind of way, in a different calendar way. Meaning the Red Sox, the New England Patriots were in the Super Bowl. The Red Sox are in the World Series. And the Celtics have a really good chance of winning the East and playing Golden State for the NBA Finals. If that happens, and I'm a Celtics fan. I root for the Celtics. If that happens, I'm going to lose my mind with this Boston thing. I'm going to go, this is too much.
Yeah, no.
Share the wealth a little bit, right?
And the problem,
people in Philadelphia are like, please, can we have the Sixers back to prominence, please?
You guys got the Celtics.
Yeah.
The football's like, I don't know. We gave you the Eagles. Be quiet.
Yeah. I was a Sixers fan when I was growing up. I didn't like the Celtics. And the Celtics wore on me as wasn't until my first year in radio. And I covered the Celtics. We went to media day and I met Red Auerbach. And he was old, and he wanted to know where, the conference room was. And me and my friend Dave Preston, we led him to the conference room. But they were a really good organization. And one of the first things that I had to cover, or I had to organize coverage for, was the death of Reggie Lewis. Remember Reggie Lewis when he died?
Yes.
He just collapsed off a basketball court or something like that. And I remember my boss had to go there. He came in to get the truck because he was going to go down there for the press conferences, and I had to do sports and I had to kind of run things. We had to get the audio on the air. And I remember freaking out. I really liked Reggie Lewis. He was a good guy and he was dead. And this was a couple of years later after Len Bias had died, like a little less than a decade after Len Bias died for the Celtics. So it was a really sad time, but that team started to wear on me. And what really kicked it in for me was Brad Stevens. I really like Brad Stevens a lot. I liked him at Butler. I like him now and whatnot. So I kind of lean in that direction. I always have a soft spot in my heart for the Nuggets. They were a bad organization when I got there and became a good organization when I left. But I will say the team that last year, the team that I enjoyed watching the most when they were on national television was not Golden State. It was the Rockets. Every time I watched a Rockets game, I liked what they were doing. It was entertaining. The Rockets played the Warriors early in the season last year, and it was like a double overtime game in Oakland, if I'm not mistaken. It was one of the most entertaining basketball games I think I've seen in 10 years for a regular season game that didn't really have much meaning, because both teams were going to be good. But it was really good. There was a playoff atmosphere and a playoff feeling to a game in early December. It was crazy. That's how good the Rockets. I really like liking the Rockets. I don't know if I'm going to like this Rockets team with Carmelo, though, because I see what you're getting at. I know where you're going. I can see that coming. That feeling of this could be Carmelo's fault if things don't go right. And Carmelo, and I think you and I talked about this summer, right? It's not October that you worry about Melo. It's
no.
not November.
He's going to be fine right now.
Right now, he's going to be fine. He's going to say all the right things. This is not when you worry about him in the locker room and causing some trouble for Mike D'Antoni. No, 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 no. It's March.
After All-Stars.
After
the All-Star break.
It's March. When he's not doing the Carmelo thing, when he's not doing his thing, when he's not doing what he wants to do, that's when you start noticing the snipping and the complaining and sort of the sidetrack things that he'll do. That's what he'll do. That's where you'll see it. You will not see it in the beginning. If you're a Rockets fan unfamiliar with this man's work, let me just tell you right now, you are going to enjoy the Carmelo Anthony you're going to get for the next 3 or 4 months. Because he's going to say all the right things and do all the right things. But then it's going to turn so quickly like the weather in New England. One day you're going to wake up and it's going to be 3 feet of snow on the ground. And you're going to want to know what the hell happened. That's Carmelo Anthony. That's what I'm worried about. Because I like that. I know the Rockets team is different, but I liked that Rockets team last year. And I don't think I like him as much this year. I don't think this is one of those additions that boosts them up. I think it's an addition that's good and it's fun, but it's not one of that takes him to the next level. What's going to take them to the next level is Chris Paul not getting hurt in the postseason. They could have beat Golden State in the Western Conference Finals if that didn't happen. I think they would have beaten Golden State.
No, I think
they had them on the ropes.
Yeah, you're totally right.
If Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, they're in the NBA Finals. I think they're the NBA champions.
And it might have been in 6 games.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they had him on the ropes in the sixth game when he went down with like a minute or so left.
Because I absolutely think they beat a LeBron Cavaliers team that he dragged to the finals again. So, yeah, it was that was a real, real tough injury. 800-777-2907. Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports is going to join us in about, 15 minutes? We'll talk to him about the NFL. I do want to get to him about the Chargers because he had a really interesting article on the Chargers and what a really, really bad decision that is. But we'll talk a lot of NFL with him. That's coming up in 15. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, SB Nation Radio.
Back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so Dodgers and Brewers tonight. So are you confident, like if the Dodgers lose tonight, are you confident for Game 7, or does that make you nervous?
No, I'm confident.
The Dodgers could win. I mean, Dodgers are probably going to win this series.
Well, no, because Major League Baseball is dictating that.
Yeah.
They don't want Red Sox, Brewers. Nobody wants that noise.
Oh, God. Keep it in Milwaukee Red Sox.
No, what you want, like, it's a conspiracy. It's going to be MLB and NFL joining up forces because you want Boston to take on LA in both baseball and football.
Now, wouldn't that be cool?
And that could happen. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
We're not getting Joe Buck at the Super Bowl, are we?
Oh, yeah. We'll get him.
Think? Does Fox have the Super Bowl this year?
I don't know. Hey, he'll just cross lines.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Dodgers win the series. I just do. I just think they're better. I think overall they're better. I like Milwaukee. They're a spunky team. They're fun, and they got the MVP, and they're good. They're a good story, and they've really built themselves with a $100 million payroll. They built themselves a winner, which is great. I mean, a lot of teams just don't do that, but I just think the Dodgers are better. And listen, do I think it's better for baseball if it's Los Angeles, Boston? Of course I do. That doesn't mean Milwaukee doesn't add something to the punch. Of course Milwaukee adds something to the punch. But, you get two markets like that playing coast to coast, that kind of thing. Yeah, it'll be a good World Series.
Just so you know, CBS has the call.
CBS has the Super Bowl, so yep, Nance and Romo.
Nance and Romo.
All right, very good. It'll be Romo's first Super Bowl call.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Jim, this is going to be great. I can't believe it, Jim. I never went to a Super Bowl before, and now I get to go.
Yeah, I guess it's on a rotation. Fox, NBC, CBS. Yeah. So they just rotate year after year. Yes, when did ABC drop out of the race?
ABC, yeah, that's a good
last
question.
Time was it was in 2006.
Yeah, was that was a John Madden, Al Michaels game, wasn't
yep.
it? Yeah. 2006, who was in that Super Bowl?
That was Super Bowl 50.
Peyton Manning? No, it wasn't 50.
40. I'm sorry, 40.
I was going to say 40. Oh, that was Steelers Seahawks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Your Seattle or your Pittsburgh Steelers.
That was the last AFC Super Bowl. That was where Ben Roethlisberger played terrible. Had a very low, but they still won. Antoine Randall-L, baby, threw to Hines Ward for a touchdown.
You're just making names up now.
And then Willie Parker ran 75 yards for a touchdown.
Completely making names up.
Oh, but you know what I remember about that Super Bowl? I remember getting up the next morning. I was doing mornings, and I had to admit that there were some calls in that Super Bowl that I, even though my team had won, there were some calls in that Super Bowl I thought were really iffy. And there were a lot of pass interference calls and some really, really some calls that I went, Listen, I'm one of those fans that I don't like it when I don't like it when I get a controversial call. I'll take it. Don't get me wrong. I'll take it. But I don't like it because I feel like I have to defend it. And sometimes my brain just goes, there's no way to defend this. This is a bad call. I'm seeing that with Red Sox fans defending the call by Joe West on the Mookie. Like, the more I'm seeing this, the Mookie, that was a completely, utterly blown call by West. The more time we've had to digest it. But Red Sox fans are like, nah, his glove was closed by a fan. And even if you explain to him, listen, when you go into the stands, it's your fair game. It's at your own risk. They still don't believe that that's real. They don't believe that that's true.
No.
They believe that you are, as a fan, you're supposed to move and leave the player unobstructed so he can go after the ball to make the play if he's in the stands. And even when you say to him, no, that's not true, when you're in the stands, when you are beyond the barrier between in play and out of play, it doesn't matter if you go into the stands. If you go into the stands, that ball is not in play. That is in the stands, and you can go get it if you want, but you cannot complain if you get bumped and bruised along the way. But they're not buying that because I think the more video evidence is that we're seeing of, yeah, Betts was probably over the line here. It looks like his glove was over the line here. They've got to find a way to defend it rather than, you know what, terrible call, but these come with the breaks, and my team got the benefit of it.
No, and that's why I think what we'll see out of this will be not a rule change, but a change to stadiums. They're going to start saying, you know what, we've had a lot of these close ones. We need to start having cameras good angles.
And listen, I think Kate Upton was right. I think these ballparks, if there was just enough gap between where the seats are and the fence, you don't need to have seats on the railing of the outfield. You don't have to build it that way. I know it would be really hard.
Could you do that at Fenway though? They're sitting on the field.
Yeah, you can't do it at these old parks. But if you're going to build a new park, put a barrier between. Just make it like that. But then it all comes down to,
if you eliminate one row, you know how much revenue we're losing?
No, no doubt. Look, they're never going to do it. They're never going to do it.
Right? Can't eliminate that one row.
Those seats are. I mean,
those 10 seats, they make up one player's contract.
You can get a good chunk of change for those seats on, you know, down a home run line or whatever.
Yep.
Like those, that short right field porch at Yankee Stadium, those seats aren't cheap.
No, and here's the stance that I take on this is that, you know, was it fan interference? Was it a bad call? Yes. Did it dictate the outcome of the game? No, because it was the first inning.
Yeah.
You know, the Astros would have had momentum.
But you don't know what would have happened. Yep.
But it was the first inning. Exactly. It would have been 2-2. You know, maybe the Astros got another run after that, but it's still, you know, we were saying this all along. On paper, the Astros were far and away looked better than the Red Sox. But
the Red Sox had more problems than when I looked at it. The Red Sox seemed to have more problems that could hurt them than the Astros.
Yeah, but they showed up. They were far and away the better team this entire series.
Ugh. Yeah.
You know, and every time you saw, like, when the Astros got up to bat, it was like they just, for some reason, the Astros decided now was a good time to go into a hitting slump.
I know. That's what's so, I don't know. I mean, it makes me, I wanted this series so badly to go, and I've been saying it all morning, I wanted this series to go to seven games so bad. I wanted that drama. I wanted that sort of unscripted stuff that we love about sports. Get to Fenway. Give me a game at Fenway where the fans are just on the edge of their seats, screaming on every pitch, late into a game seven, or even
where it's freezing and everyone's wearing hoodies. And
it's just, I love that. And the Red Sox were like, no, 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 we're getting out of here. We're wiping this team out, off the map. And, you know, you think, like, again, I bring it up with the Yankees. You think about the Yankees who struggled at Minute Maid Park last year. If they could have just won a game at Minute Maid Park, they would have won the series. They would have won the American League pennant. And Boston, their chief rivals, like, no problem for us. We go to Houston, we own it. It's ours. We took it down. And it was just hard to watch because the Astros are better than losing in five games to the Red Sox. Like, that wasn't a team that ran out of gas or, you know, like they got by on something that they just couldn't repeat. That lineup couldn't hit at various times. That lineup couldn't, that made dumb decisions in game four, running the bases and all of that. But you know what? Alex Bregman, if that ball has a trajectory of a degree lower,
it's like,
then Benintendi can't get to that.
It's like that Mighty Ducks movie. It's like, oh, if it was a half an inch this way.
That's right.
It's like, yeah, but if it was a half an inch this way, Benintendi's not diving for it. Oh, good point.
No. If it goes the other way, he's not. But if it goes lower, he can't. It's going to drop.
The only thing I can't stand watching another team celebrate on another team's field. It's like, I love the crowd noise. And when you saw the Red Sox, they finally won it. I mean, there was not a Red Sox fan in Minute Maid Park last night. It was just like, oh, you could, when you can hear the team celebrating, it's like, okay, it's not loud enough.
Except for that one kid that kept showing at the end. That one kid.
Yeah, they found the lone Red Sox fan.
Him. They found the one Red Sox fan, and he was 7. SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, I love talking football with Frank Schwab at Yahoo Sports. Been doing it a long time. BetDSI.com, Inside Line. Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports, joining us to talk some NFL. How are you, my friend?
Hey, what's going on?
You are my... I thought about this as when he told me you were coming on the show. I started thinking, okay, how many Milwaukee Brewers fans do I have in my life? And you're the only one. Congratulations. You own
wow.
it. You own it.
Yes, that's the thing. Whenever you see somebody wearing a Milwaukee Brewers hat, I live in Denver now, it's never like, oh, yeah, I live in Montana and I grew up what? No, it's always, yeah, oh, of course I'm from Wisconsin. Like, that has to, like, there are no Brewers fans that are not from the state of Wisconsin. It's not like Cubs fans that can't locate Illinois on a map, which I have an issue with, those Cubs fans. But anyway, yes, I'm on pins and needles for these two games. Boy, I don't know. I think they blew game two, and that one's going to haunt them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you your quick thoughts on these two games at Miller Park. I mean, is there confidence at their home, or is it, I don't know.
Well, the problem is, in a vacuum, there should be some confidence. Yeah, the bullpen's rested. They played well at home all year. They're going to feel a little bit better. Home crowd's going to be fired up. But you have to remember this. How can you have any confidence in a team that has literally won two playoff series since I was 6 years old?
Yeah,
and you can feel that. I was actually at games 1 and 2. I flew back for them. And you can kind of feel that whenever anything goes wrong, like, it really does get tight. this is the 49th season of Milwaukee Brewers baseball, and they've really only one World Series. This was only their third division title ever. I mean, so when you're facing the big bad Dodgers, you just don't expect to win. I don't anyway. This team is a little different. They're very good. This team has been great. They haven't quit all year. You know, winning 8 straight to take the division, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you still just feel like, it's the Brewers. Are they really going to get this done?
You know, I have enjoyed watching them. So I was talking about you yesterday. I thought your article on the Chargers was really well done and really insightful and a lot of good information. So before we get to some news and notes around the league and your thoughts on week, 6 weeks into this season, what happened with this? How did this go from we're leaving San Diego, we're going to L.A., and how did it fall apart so quickly? Because it seems to me it was almost like too much of a knee-jerk, oh, you didn't vote for the stadium, then fine, we're leaving. But it had to have been more than that, right?
I guess. I don't really think it was, and that was the problem. It was, you know, from the outside looking in anyway, it just seems like the NFL, and especially Spanos in this situation, the Chargers owner, they were so fixated on getting public money. They always are. It's such a big deal for the NFL to get public money for stadiums. And that sounds really like a terrible thing, like these guys are stealing Christmas, but it's kind of true. Like, the reason they're in Las Vegas after decades and decades and decades of being so anti-gambling is because they were starstruck that, wow, Nevada came up with $750 million. That's a record. Of course we'll give a team to Vegas. Like, it's insane. So I think that, you know, there's such a badge of honor almost in that getting public money for stadiums that when Spanos couldn't do it, I think he looked bad to his other owners. He was mad that San Diego and his family had been there for years. How could you not give me a stadium? That it was very petulant that he was just like, okay, fine. You know, it was. I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. And nobody in the NFL stopped him. That's my biggest problem with this.
I get that
Spanos is upset. Even you could talk yourself into L.A. and that great stadium, Stan Kroenke's building. But this was never a good idea. And who was the leadership in the NFL to say, we're not throwing one of our 32 franchises into a bad situation? You know, think about this. I'm going to say this, and it's true, but yet astonishing at the same time. The Los Angeles Chargers are the most anonymous team in the NFL, and they play in the second biggest city in the United States.
That's exactly
how is that
right.
How is that even possible, Tony? How is that?
No.
But we can all see it coming. And this is no second guessing. You can go back and read what I wrote the moment that the move was happening. This isn't second guessing. And guys like Bill Plaschke were in second guessing when Plaschke pretty famously almost wrote, hey, Chargers, we don't want you. I think that was the headline of his column that day. The day they announced they were moving to L.A., we don't want you. It's the first time in American professional sports history that a team relocated to a place that had no interest in it. There was no, this isn't the Las Vegas Golden Knights expanding and everybody's excited about it, or the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans was weird, but once they got to Nashville, everybody was on board. Oh, wow, we got a team. No, L.A. didn't want them. It's insane to me. And that nobody from the NFL, Goodell on down, stepped in and said, guys, this is bad for a product. San Diego's been a city we've been in 56 years. Let's make this work. You take the relocation fee, where they already pledged $300 million. The relocation fee was huge, so you're almost there. And as I wrote in that story, you talk about it, and I appreciate you saying nice words about it. Look at what we're saying about Paul Allen in NFL circles this
exactly.
week.
This
Good guy
point.
Saved NFL in Seattle. He stepped up to the plate, and Paul Allen, and they're going to love Paul Allen in Seattle. And the Seahawks first game back, he's going to get plaudits, and everybody's going to say, wow, Paul Allen, what a great man. That was Alex Spanos. He could have been that guy in San Diego. Even if he didn't feel it in his heart, he could have positioned himself with various PR moves that everybody in San Diego would have said, wow, Spanos saved the team in San Diego. That family stepped up again. It's just a total debacle from the beginning to the end here.
All right, let's get to some teams around the NFL. And you said you were in Denver. I remember living there, and I remember John Elway getting the president job. And I said, people, be careful. This is going to – if you're a fan and you love Elway for all of the Super Bowls, the moment he starts doing some things you're not liking, you're going to be torn. You're going to be torn emotionally. This is
yep.
different. You're attached to this guy in a different way than other GMs are attached to their fan base. Is the heat starting to come on from the fans that go, for everything you've done, signing Peyton Manning, the Super Bowls you won as a player – but, man, we need a quarterback, and we ain't getting one.
It's a really weird deal because, first of all, and I think people know this, but they might not know the scope of this. And I didn't know the scope of this until I moved here, and you probably didn't either. There's no more popular man probably in any state than John Elway is in Colorado.
Exactly.
And he owns this. I mean, like, it is – he's the most revered figure. I mean, let's leave it to sports, so we're kind of, you know, cutting down some arguments. But what athlete in any other state is more popular than John Elway in Colorado? It is pretty amazing. I mean, he is a god here. So, yes, he came in on a white horse, and he's going to save the Broncos. And he did get them out of the McDaniels mess. We have to remember, they won a Super Bowl. I mean,
yeah, they did, right?
When we're talking about how bad John Elway is as a general manager, and he's made so many mistakes lately, that's not untrue. He was also very good as he built up this mess that Josh McDaniels left him to being a very, very good team for 4 years, and it culminated in that Super Bowl. So that's on his resume too. We can't just ignore that. We can't just say, well, Elway stinks at his job. No. What happened from 2012 to 2015? We have to say that too. But now, Tony, it's like, every move he makes. I mean, even on down the line, even stuff like drafting Garrett Bowles over Ryan Ramczyk, and Ryan Ramczyk's gone on to be one of the better tackles in the NFL, and Garrett Bowles is. It just seems like, and we're not just talking quarterbacks. We're talking, when was the last time he drafted an offensive skill position player who really hit? And now it might look like Courtland Sutton. Courtland Sutton looks like a really good player, and the running backs they have are good. But before that, he went through about a six-year stretch where he didn't draft any impact. You know, Demaryius Thomas was before him, and Emmanuel Sanders was a free agent. You know, so he's made a lot of mistakes. And yes, it's uneasy now. It's the god, John Elway, who can't get the quarterback, who can't fill up this roster, who made the bad hire with Vance Joseph, although who knows, maybe Vance is going to turn this thing around now. He got a nice win last night. But what do you do? I just can't imagine ever waking up and looking at my email and something pops in my box that says, Broncos fire general manager, executive vice president John Elway. It just can't compute in my head that they would ever do that, so I don't know what's going to happen.
And to his credit, and you bring up a point, he won the Super Bowl by not just saying, well, let Manning be Manning. He had to build a defense, and he built the defense.
Yes.
So I got to give him credit for that, too. So I want to ask
you about... He did great work, huh?
Yeah, he did great work on that, that's for sure. Give me an idea of when you watched Patrick Mahomes last week against the Patriots, when you saw they were trailing, he comes back, it's a if you want to say a good road, you know, a good loss, it's a good loss. But when you look at this Kansas City team, Frank, I said, I've never seen the Chiefs look like this ever. What are we seeing with Kansas City?
I think it's totally legit. And a lot of people have pointed out that they started 5-0 last year and kind of struggled for a long time, lost in the first round of the playoffs. And this is just a different team to me. I mean, there's nothing weird about this start. It's not like, you know, a few years ago where they were like 9-0, I think it was, and they faced like 7 backup quarterbacks just because of luck. No, this is, you know, look at what the Chargers are now. They're a pretty good football team. Well, the Chiefs went on the road and handled them. Or look at, you know, I still think the Jaguars are pretty good. The Chiefs blew them out. The San Francisco win, that was Jimmy Garoppolo still. He got hurt in the last 2 minutes or so. That was a good win. They've gone on the road. The Broncos might not be a great football team, but it's still tough to win in Denver. They had a comeback win in Denver. They won at Pittsburgh, who still have a lot of talent. This is a legit football team. Yes, the defense stinks. It does. It's not very good. But maybe this is just the way the NFL is going to be now. Like, you know, maybe you just don't need a good defense anymore because now it's almost college-esque where we're getting 43-40 games and it's not really that big of a deal anymore. That maybe the Chiefs are the new brand of football where, well, okay, we'll just outscore you, and that's fine. We're good with that. So I don't know. I still do think the defense is going to bite them sometime in January. But that doesn't mean that this is a fluke or Mahomes is going to struggle or slump or he's Dak Prescott. No, everything is legit. If you watch this Chiefs team, look at their results. This is a very good football team, and I think they're going to be here all year. I don't think they're going away.
Listen, I get keeping quarterbacks healthy. I understand the business side of this. Frank, if I'm buying stock in this league and I look ahead 10 years where maybe more rule changes come and it's more offensive and it's a different game than we're used to, but they withstand all the criticism, is the NFL heading into a good place or is it yet to be known?
I think it's fine. I think it's always good. It is a bigger picture, I think, but the product itself is always going to survive because nobody has time for 4.5-hour baseball games other than me and you.
Yeah,
and nobody's watching an 82-game NBA season, although I love the NBA too, or whatever. But the NFL, it's always just, hey, one day a week I'm all into the NFL and I love it, and it's a Sunday and I can sit around and drink beer with my buddies. It's a fun game and the history. The product is good. The product is always good in the NFL. But, you know, the quarterback stuff, I don't know. I guess I get it. I understand. I understand why people, flag football, blah, 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 blah. I don't care, though. At the end of the day, I don't want to watch Deshaun Kizer quarterbacking games in December.
Yeah,
I just don't.
I don't either.
You know, yeah. When we're talking about these great games, you know, the Brady versus Garoppolo, or Brady versus Mahomes on Sunday night, whatever. If roughing the passer penalties bring us those kind of games, or Drew Brees against Matt Ryan a few weeks ago, that great overtime game in Atlanta, or any other games, There's more good quarterbacks now than there's ever been in the NFL, ever. I mean, we're 25 deep. I really believe that. And if keeping these guys healthy means we're going to get a good product all year like this, there's been so many good games so far. It's unbelievable. This has been such a fun season. And, yeah, there's been a lot of complaining about the roughing the passer rules. And I get it. I do. But at the end of the day, I don't want to see Tom Savage starting a quarterback on my TV. I just don't. I'm kind of fine with all of it.
Frank, you're the best. I love you, man. Great. Thanks for getting up early with us, my friend.
And, no problem, man. I wasn't going to sleep anyway because I'm worried about this game tonight. So, you know, right. It's all good, Tony.
Good luck with the Brewers, my friend. We'll talk to you later. Thanks, man.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
You got it. Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports on our BetDSI Insider line. And again, you can go to BetDSI now and use the promo code WIN, and you can win 125 and get 125% bonus on your first deposit. It is SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So I said to Frank Schwab at Yahoo Sports, I said, you are the only Milwaukee Brewers fan I know. And he's like, yeah, it's true. I mean, if you talk about teams like that, I started thinking, like, in terms of the NFL, is there a fan base, Ron, that you just, like, if somebody said they were a fan of that particular team, you'd be surprised. Like, you just don't know anybody that likes that team. Like, I think I know pretty much a fan for every fan base in the NFL. But if somebody came up to me and said they were like Toronto Blue Jays fan, I'd be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be like, well, you're the only Blue Jays fan I know.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know any Blue Jays fan.
Buccaneers? Can we throw them in that category?
Yeah, Buccaneers.
Because I don't really know too many Buccaneer fans.
My wife's the only one I know. My wife is the only one I know. Well, outside of her family. My wife and her family. So, I never met anybody.
Perfect example. If you ran into someone on the street and they were wearing Buccaneers hat or shirt, yeah, or whatever, you'd be like, hey,
yeah, be like,
you,
wow,
and my wife have something in common.
That's it. That's right.
That could be a weird pickup line, but hey, I mean, it could work for you.
Yeah. Like, when you lived in L.A., did you know a lot of Clippers fans?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I was curious because I don't know.
No, but there was a reason why to it. It was because Clipper tickets were considerably cheaper than Laker tickets, even though they both played in the Staples Center.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'd have a lot of friends, especially, you know, us coming out of college, who they would do the game packages for Clipper fans because you got to see all the other great teams.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good point. You got to see the players come in.
You got to see LeBron, the Cavaliers, yeah, come in, or, you know, the Spurs come and play the Clippers. And it was, you know, 10 times, maybe 20 times cheaper, half the ticket price than it would be to go to a Laker game, having the same seats, or actually having better seats.
Good luck to the Dodgers this weekend against the mighty Milwaukee Brewers. Friday, and then if they lose Friday, it'll be Saturday, and we'll have a World Series done by the weekend. SB Nation Radio.